Yeah, so I'm really excited that my OnlyFans is up and running. Oh, we're live.
Whoops. Hey, Smutters.
Hey.
What's up, what's up, what's up?
Oh, you know, same old, same old.
Do you have anything fun to share today?
Of course I do.
What is it?
It's my freaking birthday.
Well, Monday's your birthday, but...
Well, I have birthday months.
Birthday months.
Not days.
Okay. Yes.
Comfortable?
I'm trying to get comfortable.
Waller and Hog?
It's hard to.
Well.
I'm so tired. Today kicked my butt. It was so hot today. So, I have some awesome news that you actually sent me.
Uh-oh.
For all the Loch Ness Monster enthusiasts out there like me. There
it is an actual whale penis.
It's not a whale penis. You're so weird. Okay. So, scientists discovered that plesiosaur-like dinosaurs did actually live in the Loch. So, even though that was like 65 million years ago, it may not be too off that there could be a plesiosaur in the Loch Ness right now.
You're a plesiosaur.
You're a monster.
You're a monster. It's my birthday. You can't be mean to me.
All right. So, this week, what we're going to do is we've had so many friends and acquaintances go to St. Augustine this past week.
I don't know. It's our vacation place.
It is our vacation place.
We used to go like 2 weeks every summer. Like it was our place. Like we even talked about moving there.
Yeah, we really wanted to move there. We love St. Augustine so much. It's so beautiful and has so much history. It's very haunted there, y'all. But, like, my dad started taking me there when I was probably around 4 or 5, and we went every year. And then after Troy and I got married, we started going and taking our family. And it's just, it's one of our places. And this past week, we have had so many people.
Some are actually really close people, including our son Caleb. He went down there.
Yeah.
Without us.
Yeah. So I'm mad at him right now. And then he decided to send us pictures of...
But he's grown, and it's just... It sucks that he was there, kind of, because we wasn't. But, like you said, your dad took you.
Right,
we
true.
We took them, and now he's going down there. It's kind of like a passing of tradition. The torch.
Yeah,
thing.
It is. But then he sent us pictures of him eating at our favorite restaurants.
Yeah.
And I wished he was, like, 5 again so I could beat his little butt for doing that.
At least he got really burnt, so ha.
Yeah, that's what you get next time wear sunscreen. But yeah, that's one of my most favorite places in the whole wide world. And I thought that since we knew so many families going there, and maybe it's just like a Tennessee thing where, I mean, St. Augustine's not even that close. It's like, what, 8 hours away?
At least, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's other places you could go that are closer, but I think our spot has been found out.
Yeah.
Maybe we should quit talking to people about our cats probably out of the bag. Yeah. Now everybody's
done so much stuff there too, though, you know, between, you know, deep sea fishing, the parasailing, we knew, and also too, it wasn't just the tourist areas. We knew where the local Walmart was and all the other Verizon store.
Absolutely.
And everything else, so.
Like I could probably do a ghost tour there on my own for everybody if I needed to. I'll take over. I got it from here. But also, here's the thing. Now, Disney World is probably about an hour or two from St. Augustine. And I was telling our little girl that when we took her to Disney World, I've got to tell you this story if I never have, because I almost beat Ariel's ass in Disney World. Did I tell you about that?
I don't know.
Okay, so Ashlyn was turning 5, and we were in Florida, so we were like, you know what, for her 5th birthday, let's do Disney World. Big mistake, because her birthday's in June. It was terrible. But she had fun. She got the ears and everything, so that's all that mattered. Now, when we get to Disney World, our plan was we got a little autograph book and we're going to get all the autographs, get the princesses. So we were trying to get all the princesses, and Ashlyn's favorite princess was Ariel. Okay. So Ashlyn gets up to Ariel after waiting in line and she's like in shock, and Ariel's asking her questions and Ashlyn doesn't say a word. And Ariel got smart with her. I'm like, "Don't you talk?" And I walked up behind her. I was like, "Excuse me." I was like, "You will not talk to any child that way." And I was like, "Give her a hug and we're leaving." But Ariel, you about got that ass beat that day. So, but anyway, no, Disneyland or Disney World was wonderful. St. Augustine is just such a wonderful place. If you do ever get a chance to go, go, because it's just a whole different vibe there, and it is absolutely wonderful.
I think I like it because there's no high-rise condos. Like, it's all, there's nothing.
You it's see, not like, huge, yeah. Right? Is that what you're saying? Because, yeah. Like, you see, we've only been to the Miami airport, but you see pictures of Miami and stuff on TV, and...
Well, in Panama, I mean, all the high condominiums that, you know, several stories high, you know, I think the biggest one there is, what, 3 or 4 stories?
Probably.
You know, so.
Yes, but it is absolutely wonderful. So, let's go ahead and dive on into this. Now, what I'm going to do is, we were unpacking some of our stuff because we just recently moved, and this book was in my books. I don't remember where we got it or how I ended up with it. But it is called The Ghosts of St. Augustine. And what it is, I think it's like 25 little ghost stories of St. Augustine. So I think we're probably going to do about 3 of them if we have time. Because they're cool little stories. They don't go through really the history that much. They tell about somebody going through St. Augustine and seeing things how, you know, a visitor would see it pretty much. So I figured that would be kind of fun. And let's see here. The story that we're going to start off with is called Toke's Place. And I picked this story because the main character's name is Jen. So, I'm going to be honest with y'all. Okay, so. The house at 26 Toke's Place has served many functions. It has been an antique store, a restaurant, and a private residence. It was built in 1910 as a carriage house or servants' quarters for a larger estate. When the main house of the estate burned to the ground, the owners moved into the smaller building. Jennifer was 8 years old when her family moved into the house. Strange happenings occurred from the very start. The first incident took place the day they came to look at it, even before they moved in. The family walked all through the house with the owner and then gathered in the living room. The adults were busy talking and Jennifer had to go to the bathroom. While she was in the bathroom, she happened to look into a full-length mirror on the wall and saw squiggly lines. She couldn't figure it out, but when she moved her leg, the lines reflected into it. They read, "Ha," in cursive writing. At 8, she couldn't read cursive very well, but she did know "Ha." The mirror is talking to her.
Nope. Don't do mirrors.
Nope. She went downstairs and told her sister the mirror in the bathroom said hello to me. Her sister Stephanie, who was 3 years older, frowned. "That's stupid. You're crazy." "No, Stephanie. It said hello." Jennifer insisted and pulled Stephanie upstairs to show her. There was nothing there. Nothing on the mirror. Jennifer swore that she had seen a reflection on her leg. A reflection from the mirror. "Look, Jennifer, if Ha was reflected on your leg, it would have to look like this." And she drew the words backwards in the air with her finger. "But there's nothing there. There is no way you could have seen that." And she stomped downstairs. "You saw what?" "Mother, the mirror said hi to me in cursive on my leg." Oh my gosh, if one of my kids came and told me that, I'd just be like, okay. And go find something else to do. You know what? That's wonderful. "You couldn't have seen anything. There's nothing in the mirror. There's nothing around here in the bathroom that could have reflected high in the mirror. No one would believe Jennifer." And so the family moved in. the three children, Stephanie, Jennifer, and John, their 9-year-old brother, had rooms upstairs, and the mother, Sarah, a room on the first floor. Jennifer had a front room, large and spacious. There were windows on the north side and on the front west side overlooking the porch. She loved it and quickly had her many stuffed animals arranged around the room. She had her two favorite bears, Furry and Shy, who were inseparable, in the middle of her pillows. Jennifer was very organized for an 8-year-old. The family had pets, two large dogs, an Airedale named Dana and Frida, a lab. Both dogs were extremely intelligent. They could raise windows, lift latches on the screen doors, and even turn knobs to open the bathroom door and bedroom doors. And yet they were very well trained and obedient. Both were housebroken and mannerly. Even though they were big dogs, they never caused any problems. However, soon after moving in, the family went out for a couple of hours and left the dogs in Jennifer's room. When they returned, the room was in shambles. The bedspread had been ripped from the bed, the pillows shredded, the curtains torn down, and clothes and stuffed animals scattered everywhere. Both dogs had had accidents all over the carpet. Something had badly frightened them. Curiously, they hadn't opened the door and just left the room, which they were both capable of doing. The next time the family went out, the dogs were left in Stephanie's room, and there was no problem. There were other aggravations. Jennifer's closet was divided into sections. The section next to the outside wall apparently had been built for shoes because it was filled with racks and a high shelf. Not long after Jennifer was settled in her room, Shaw, one of her two favorite teddy bears, disappeared. She ran crying to her mother, and at first, Sarah thought Stephanie or John had hid the stuffed animal. Neither was above teasing their little sister. She scolded them, but neither would admit to the prank, so she went up to search Jennifer's room thoroughly. She found Shaw in the closet on the back shelf above the shoe racks. 2 days later, Shaw disappeared again. Again, Sarah scolded Stephanie and John, and this time sent them to their rooms. Once again, she found Shaw on the shelf in the closet. In fact, in exactly the same spot as before. A week later, neither of the older children were around. Stephanie was with friends and John was outside playing. Shaw disappeared yet again. This time, Sarah went directly to the closet to find the bear, and sure enough, he was in the accustomed spot on the shelf. After that, Shaw disappeared with regularity all the years they lived in the house, and Jennifer soon learned to climb on a chair and retrieve her wandering teddy bear herself. Wow. Once Sarah's friend Nancy came to visit and stayed in a room downstairs. Late one evening, after everyone was asleep, Nancy came in and woke Sarah. She said she heard John crying for his mother. Sarah got up, put on a robe, and went upstairs. John was sound asleep. Sarah went back down and got in bed. A short time later, Nancy came in again. She could hear John crying. Mommy, mommy, mommy. Again, Sarah went up and found John sleeping soundly. A third time, Nancy came rushing in. Sarah, John is sitting at the top of the stairs and calling you. Sarah was angry. Look, Nancy, he is 9 years old. He doesn't cry for me anymore. He hasn't cried in the middle of the night for years. Sarah, I can see him sitting at the top of the steps, Nancy was saying while she was standing in the doorway. He can't be. Well, he is. Before Sarah could get to the doorway to look, the boy Nancy had seen disappeared. They went upstairs together into John's room, and they found him sleeping soundly, wrapped in his blankets. It was obvious he hadn't been awake. This house is scary.
Mm-hmm.
On another occasion, Sarah's friend Shirley came to stay with the children while Sarah went to visit relatives in Jacksonville. The children were very self-sufficient, very independent, and Stephanie at 11 was an excellent cook, and together the kids could take care of themselves. Shirley expected to be no more than an adult presence in the house while Sarah was gone. The second night she was there, she had a dream, a very real dream, it later seemed to her. In the dream, a small boy came into her room and woke her up. He was a nice little boy, very polite, and all he wanted to show her was his room. Come upstairs and see my room. You must see my room. He took her by the hand and led her up the stairs. Halfway up, she stopped. "What's wrong?" he asked. She hesitated. "I don't know." "Come on," he smiled up at her and pulled her up the stairs. As they reached the top of the stairs, he looked at her with an impish grin and said, "I'm dead, you know." With that, she woke with a start and broke into a cold sweat. The two dogs were on either side of her. Frida was snapping at something above her head. Horrified, Shirley jumped out of bed and packed her bag and left the house, leaving a note behind for Sarah. "Next time you leave, take your spirits with you." Shirley never came back. Oh my goodness. Did you hear what he said?
Mm-hmm.
Several months later, Sarah went out and two teenage girls came to visit or came to sit with the children. Jennifer and her friend Stacy were in Jennifer's room playing. Suddenly, they heard a child's voice crying out, "Help me, help me." They looked around and could see no one. John was not outside the door trying to scare them. They walked all around the room trying to find the source of the voice. They ended up at the window and the sound seemed to be coming from just outside. Excited, they rushed downstairs for the sitters and all four girls returned. They stood in the middle of the room and listened. "Help me, help me," the small voice cried out again. The sound came from a window sill. It sounded like a little boy calling to his mother. The two teenage sitters couldn't hear the voice, but Stacy heard it and Jennifer heard it. Immediately, all four girls were seized with terror and raced downstairs. They stayed together in the living room until Sarah got home. Stephanie and Jennifer slept with Sarah that night. Unusual incidents continued to occur in the house, especially with Jennifer. Periodically, she felt presence of someone in her room, and often she heard noises that no one could identify. She disappeared with regularity, always to be found in the closet. And Wynn would loudly rush through the attic. Finally, Sarah decided to move. Another strange thing happened as they prepared to leave the house. Sarah decided to have a yard sale and set everything up out front. As the morning progressed, Jennifer and her friend Stacy watched with detachment from the top of the stairs inside the house. About mid-morning, a woman came with a little girl, maybe a couple years younger than Jennifer. She was into everything. She whined. She was impolite. She was very sassy to her mother. She was obviously spoiled and not a very nice child. Jennifer and Stacy watched, neither of them liking this little girl. Eventually, the child came into the house and went up to use the bathroom. When she came back out, she stopped on the steps and pestered the two girls, who scolded her. In a huff, she plopped down on the step above Stacy, who was sitting on the step above Jennifer. All of a sudden, the girl lurched forward against Stacy, who fell against Jennifer. Jennifer turned to see what happened, and Stacy turned to glare at the little girl. The girl turned around to see who had pushed her, and no one was there. She screamed and raced out of the house. After everything had been moved out and the family had found a new home, Sarah and the children returned to clean the house. Jennifer noticed a red sap oozing from the banister at the top of the stairs. Her mother told her, "The banister's bleeding. Your ghost misses you." Wow, Mom.
Wow.
In later years...
I bet this is the house I saw that ghost in.
It may have been.
Bet you.
In later years, Jennifer heard another explanation. Supposedly, there originally had been a wall where the banister was located. The wall often oozed what looked like blood. Some say it was the blood of the little boy's grandmother who allegedly died a violent death in the house. Several times the wall was covered all over, but it continued to ooze bloody-looking fluid. Finally, the wall was replaced with railing. No one has ever confirmed this version, but that is the legend.
They don't look to see where it's coming from, why a wall is oozing.
Jennifer has been back to the house many times since her family moved out and has talked to the various owners. One of the owners reported seeing a woman wearing a long skirt walking downstairs. He also had problems with doors locking and unlocking. In fact, after several experiences, he finally had the house blessed by a priest. Subsequent owners have had no problems. Perhaps the little boy and his mother or grandmother finally found each other and are at peace.
Do we know the address of this house?
No, I don't think it said. But
I could probably tell you where it's at, though.
I bet you could. I bet if you look up Toke's Place. Yeah, it's the house at 26 Toke's Place. Can you find a picture of it?
Yeah.
Cool, cool. So, that was pretty scary. I may just have time for one more, because that was a fairly...
It is the house.
Shut up.
That's it, right?
Maybe.
It's not. Probably not.
I don't know, because I looked for that house, because I wanted
to... It's in the historic district, and that's...
Most of the houses there are haunted. But,
okay. No, that's not it. Never mind.
I feel like the house that... Okay, y'all. We've told this story before, and hopefully... We never found the picture, right?
I thought I did.
You found the one from Savannah.
No.
That we posted.
Yeah.
But I don't remember seeing that one from St. Augustine.
Because it's on this computer.
Okay, so what we'll do is we will find the picture from we went on a ghost tour. And did you go on that one?
No. It was one where you went and you were just taking random pictures. And then after we had gotten back home, I was looking through them and then just saw the little girl's face in the window.
Yeah. Y'all, I looked at those pictures a million times, okay? Trying to see something. And then Troy just automatically sees something as soon as he starts looking.
Did you not see it too, though? I mean, like, you saw what I saw, right?
I saw what you saw after you saw it. Because I had looked at them like crazy. And I guess me being a big believer, I knew I was going to see something. So I was looking everywhere. And maybe that's why I didn't see anything. Troy's my skeptic, and he's getting better, y'all. But he was a huge skeptic, and he looked at the pictures, and he was like, oh my gosh, there's this little girl. And if we do have anybody from St. Augustine listening, because I would like to know which house this is, if I remember right, the little girl's name was Violet, I want to say. Does that sound familiar? It was either Violet or Charlotte. But... I think the house is privately owned now because we couldn't go in, but we could take pictures. And she was standing there looking out the window, and it was a little girl. And so if anybody from St. Augustine, if y'all have heard of that story or anything, and you can send me which house it was or any info you have on it, send us a DM on our Instagram at Supernatural Smut Podcast, or you can send us an email at supernaturalsmut1@gmail.com, because this has been bugging me. I've been trying so hard to find the story of that house and I couldn't. So I think what we're going to do, we have time probably for one more story, and I'm going to let you pick. Okay?
Mm-mm.
Yes.
No, I'm not good at picking.
Well, I think so many podcasts has done the St. Augustine Lighthouse that we're going to go another route. We are going to do the Gates of Hell.
Rut-row.
And I think this one has a little bit more action, and I don't think it's as long as the other one. So... Almost without exception, the ghosts and spirits dwelling in St. Augustine are as benign as Casper. Like the living inhabitants, they seem to be tempered by the strife and struggles of the city's long history. However, there are exceptions, and this story is about a passage to hell, which was related to me by a nervous young woman, says the author. I received a call from a young woman who had heard that I was writing about the ghost of St. Augustine. She said she had something interesting to tell me. We met for coffee on Avowal Street. After we introduced ourselves, we sat down and ordered coffee and sandwiches. We talked for a few minutes about trivial things. She asked what I thought of St. Augustine and told me that she was a native. Then I asked what she had to tell me. At first, She was silent. I waited. Finally, she took a deep breath and began talking, very softly, as if she were afraid someone might hear. My friend Carol in the studio just down the street told me you were writing a book about the ghost here. Yes, I know Carol. Nice lady. She gave me the names of several people, although she never mentioned yours. Well, I've been reluctant to say anything about this. It was so terrifying. I have nightmares, and it's been almost 7 years. Maybe telling you will help. She looked around again, and in an even quieter voice, she continued. Back in the late 80s, my husband and I, we were newlyweds at the time. We rented a small house over on the island. The house was only about 10 years old. It was a nice little place, two bedrooms, central air. The garage had been converted into a laundry room and workshop, but a carport had been added shortly before we moved in. She fidgeted with her coffee cup and looked down into it, pausing. The laundry room. That was the problem. Well, anyway, it seemed like a very nice place, and we could afford the rent, so we took it. And everything was fine for the first few days. My husband had taken a vacation, and we were busy moving and arranging. Then the following Monday, the Monday after we moved in, my husband went back to work, and I was alone in the house for the first time. I had fixed him breakfast, and after he left, I started cleaning house. First, I cleaned up after breakfast. Then I went into the laundry room to start a load of wash. I got the strangest feeling. My spine began tingling, and I felt his presence. It was physical, like some giant person was hugging me, a pressure all around me, like being underwater 20 or 30 feet. It wasn't uncomfortable, it was just very strange, and I felt cold, really weird. Well, where was I? I got the washing started and went back into the other part of the house. I was back in the laundry room 3 or 4 times that day, putting things in and taking them out of the washer and dryer, and each time I was in there, I got this weird sensation. She stopped talking for a moment and messed with her coffee cup, as though she were remembering. I told Jim, that's my husband, about it that evening, and he just thought I was anxious about being alone after spending so much time with him during the wedding and honeymoon and all, but he understood and we talked about it. Then he suggested that we go into the laundry room together. I didn't want to, but he insisted, so we went in. I felt nothing, neither did Jim. In fact, he was in the room for perhaps an hour, just messing around. He didn't experience anything. At least he didn't admit it, so I just let it pass. But the next day, Tuesday, I found myself avoiding going in there. Silly, I guess, but I didn't want to go in there. Then on Wednesday, I had to. And the same thing happened, only this time, it was worse. This time, it wasn't a gentle hug. It was a constricting, icy, cold grip. I could hardly move, and I was shivering from the cold. I panicked and broke free from it, ran out of the room, out of the house, onto the front porch, and just sat, trying to catch my breath, almost in tears. That's when the lady next door came over. She introduced herself. She was a nice older woman, and she and her husband were both retired. Then I guess she saw I was upset and asked if anything was the matter, so I told her what had happened. Well, she just looked at me, then at the house, with this serious look. You know, something like that happened to the last people who lived there. The woman was in the laundry room and said she was overcome by fear, like Amityville. She just ran out of the house terrified, and I found her sitting out by that tree, crying her eyes out. Never would go back. They moved the next day. Her husband had to do all the packing. She wouldn't go near the place. And I've never been in there myself. Some strange goings on, if you ask me. Anyway, come on over and have some coffee and it'll calm your nerves. This young woman stopped and looked at me, her eyes questioning. Is this weird or what? She asked. I chuckled. Yes, it's weird, but it's certainly believable. I spent an hour or more with a neighbor and finally went home. I didn't go into the laundry room again. I was afraid. And when Jim came home that evening, I tried to act as nonchalant as possible. I didn't tell him what had happened, and he didn't ask. Everything was okay for about 3 weeks. Nothing much happened. Of course, I used the laundry room, and every time I went in, I felt presence, but it was gentle, not frightening like the first time. Then right after Jim had left, one Thursday morning, I went to the laundry room. Her voice wavered and trailed off. I reached out and patted her hand. "It's okay," I said. "Nothing can bother you now." I sat silent for several minutes, and the waitress came by and refilled our cups. Finally, she looked back at me and went on. I went back into the laundry room, and I was seized by an even more powerful force. It totally enveloped me, crushing, pulling me. I struggled. I couldn't breathe. I tried to scream, but nothing came out. The force was trying to drag me across the room. I looked over and could see this image. It was like heat waves shimmering off the pavement on a hot day. And it was sort of oval, like a doorway, but oval. It reminded me of the mouth of a cave, perhaps, or something like that. But it wasn't hot. The whole room was cold, icy cold, like the inside of a walk-in refrigerator. I was numb from the cold and I couldn't breathe and I was getting weak. The thing was dragging me toward the shimmering archway. Finally, I broke free. I ran from the room out the front door and stood gasping for breath on the porch. I could hardly stand. My knees shook. My whole body was shaking. Eventually, I was able to get to the car. I wouldn't go back in that house for the car keys, but there was a spare set of keys in one of the little magnetic boxes stuck under the wheel well. I got them and drove into town. I stayed away for several hours. Finally, in the middle of the afternoon, I came back and went inside. Everything was okay. I was exhausted and drained. I went to the bedroom. It was at the far end of the house. I went in, locked the door, lay down, closed my eyes. I was asleep in minutes. An hour or so later, I guess it was about 4 o'clock, I woke up with a start. Someone was sitting on my bed. I couldn't see them, but the sheets were stretched, and I could see the indention where someone was sitting, but there was no one there. This time I wasn't panicked. I was just mad. I had enough. I got up, got my purse and a few things, and went outside to wait for Jim. When he came home an hour later, I told him what had happened. He immediately called a friend of his who knew a psychic. She arrived about 6. Her name was Mona Freeman, something like that. Reluctantly, I went back into the house with them. I was scared to death. We walked around the house, Mona stopping, looking at this and that, closing her eyes, then finally went to the laundry room. I refused to go in, and the doorway was as close as I'd get, but Mona and Jim and his friend charged right in. Mona stopped abruptly in the middle of the room and was quiet, standing there. Sometimes she'd close her eyes, sometimes she'd look around, but she stood completely still for the longest time, silent. Finally, she spoke. "There are spirits in here, a family. There's a man, a woman, and a young boy about 8. I think they were killed in an automobile accident about 8 years ago. One of them was probably sitting on your bed, maybe trying to comfort you." She paused and then continued, "But that's not your problem. There's also some kind of a passage, a pathway, a doorway into the spirit world, but it feels very bad. Let's go outside," she said. When we were back out on the porch again, she stood silent for a long time with her eyes closed, like she was trying to get in touch with something. Then she explained, "As I was telling you about the passage, I could feel an awful demonic presence trying to get through. I don't know how long that passage will be there, nor how big it will get, but it's definitely there, a sort of gateway to hell." "A gateway to hell," the young woman repeated. We stayed in a motel that night, and like those former residents, Jim moved us out the next day. Well, that's my story. Weird, isn't it? "Not at all," I said. "I bet I've talked to 50 people here in town with stories just as strange. After doing the research for this book, I'd believe almost anything." Then an idea came to mind. "Would you mind going over there with me to show me the house?" She just shuddered, rolled her eyes, and looked at me. "You've got to be kidding. I wouldn't go near that house. Well, I won't even cross over that bridge." And that was the end. Could you imagine?
No.
A whole damn family living in a laundry room?
Nope.
But yeah, so that is the gateway to hell. And listen, y'all, in St. Augustine, all the houses are so old, okay? So there's always something going on there. And then, you know, if you don't know much about it, they've got the fort there. where they've had battles fought, and it's one of the oldest cities in America. So it has so much going on. That book just barely hits the, you know, the tip of the iceberg pretty much. But if y'all want to learn more about it, I'm sorry those were kind of long. But it's very interesting just to look it up, and you can even look at their ghost tours, and they'll kind of go over all.
I think you did all the ghost tours there, didn't you?
Yeah, I've done them all. Like I said, I could take them on ghost tours pretty much if I needed to. But also, if you haven't heard about the lighthouse there, it is one of the most haunted things in St. Augustine and Flagler College as well, in the prison.
The fort.
Huh?
The fort.
I mean, obviously the fort's haunted. But, yeah, look at the lighthouse and Flagler College and the prison and stuff, because it's got a bunch of stories. But I've heard so many podcasters talk about those stories, I figured we'd just do something a little bit different in the parts that they don't really tell you about. And this book covered it all. And y'all, this book is called The Ghost of St. Augustine, and it is wonderful. I really like it, and I'm so happy that we found it. So, do you have anything you need to say?
No, I don't guess so. Except for one thing, but it's nothing about what you just went over.
What is it?
The greatest dad moment ever.
Oh, yeah, y'all.
Ashlyn comes down here earlier, turns off a movie you were watching, and turns it on to Star Wars.
Y'all, I wasn't even mad. I was watching House of Gucci, the one with Lady Gaga in it, and because I'd been wanting to see that forever. And I come back in here, and she's like glued to the TV watching Star Wars. And I was like, so we're doing this now. Okay.
Deal.
Yeah, I was totally fine with it. I was like, I'll go back to my other movie in a minute. But, yeah, so that's basically it. I'm sorry if I bored y'all, but I have a fun story for next week. We're going to be back in Savannah, Georgia next week. So we love Savannah.
In Charleston and St. Augustine. If you can't tell, we like the beach areas.
The what?
Beach.
Oh, I was like, what?
Anyways.
What? Stop. I didn't know what you said. Okay. So that is tonight's story. Thank you guys for tuning in, and be ready for next week because it's going to be a good one.
Yes, make sure you send tips.
Send your tips our way. But yeah, it's going to be really good. I'm really excited about that. It kind of fell in our laps right before we started recording, and it's going to be wonderful. So we will see you guys next week. Y'all make good choices, and fuck you, Barry. Anything?
No.
Not tonight.
You need to stop saying that.
Fuck you, Barry. I said it again. All right.
Fine. Carmen, bro.
All right, y'all. We will see y'all next Sunday. Bye.